Are you willing to talk to me about that work you did with Dolly Parton?
Yeah. While I was with RCA?
Yes, while you were with RCA.
Yeah, is that mainly what it is, just her?
No, it's not only her, but okay. She's important on this. Actually, the first thing I wanted to know from you was just whether you had a real theory of production. I know that so many producers work so differently and had different attitudes about what the role of the producer was and should be, and I was curious what your take on that was.
All right. Let me get this other phone. Are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I was just moving to a different phone.
Oh, okay. So what
was... Well, I was figured that the production role to me meant it's the point where at that time the company met the artist. There were production people and vice presidents and everything else, but somebody had to work directly with the artist, and that is the role of the producer to do that, to represent the company to the artist, and conversely, to represent the artist back to the company.
Mm-hmm.
And each artist, I don't know how many I produced. One of the guys told me it was 51 that he counted one time. But each artist comes with a different set of needs, I think. And my role, the role I assumed, was to find out what the needs were of each artist, try to fill them, and by that I meant you're recording now, aren't you, so you can...
Yes, I am. Yes.
Tango.
Right, I can work on that, yeah.
Okay.
Keeps me accurate, and yeah, I am.
Each artist has a different set of capabilities, and I would presume my job to be to help the artist bring out who they wanted to be, and to fill in any of the gaps. Like some artists didn't need much help in choosing their material.
Mm-hmm.
And Dolly is one like that.
Because she wrote it and brought it in.
Yeah.
But
and of course Porter brought her to RCA.
Uh huh.
And I was producing Porter, so I became her producer and their producer.
Yeah.
And Porter himself would be pretty well prepared, for a session when he came, because he and the band, when we did use his band, the road band, there's another thing. Some of the artists, you know, didn't have that, and the producer in that case would then help fill in and hire the musicians and help formulate the persona that the artist was going to present.
Mm-hmm.
But they would get out on the bus, and Porter and Dolly, for example, they would have rehearsed a lot discussed a lot of things as they traveled during those road dates, and so my job with them was to find out how to fill what they needed to have filled,
yeah,
what role I need to fill with them, and it was a not like it is with some of the artists. That is, Dolly, as you noticed, she wrote songs, and she wrote good songs. And it was just a matter of listening to how she did it and approving the takes and encouraging her.
Yeah.
And being some of a confidant to her, because a porter does have a strong personality.
Right.
And she sometimes would mention things to me privately that she had aspirations for, you know. So my role was to encourage her to continue her writing, to do some things like, I had an idea once of trying to produce a record that, like, you could hear with a somebody recording in their own tape machine, had automatic volume control, and their voice would come out because they were up loud and close, and that would knock down the sound of the music. But as soon as they quit singing, that automatic volume would raise it back up to grab the instrument.
Yeah.
So I talked to two of our engineers at RCA who were the best, and explained this idea. And I got a call one day from Al Pachuki. What are you doing? Come down to the studio. I went down, and he said, I figured out how we can do what you're talking about. So it was a bit of production technique whereby we had the same effect on the voice, and in this case, Dolly's voice, and the lead instrument. But the rhythm, because you wanted to keep that steady, you didn't want the bass and the piano and drums and things going up and down, you wanted them to continue through, so they weren't fed through this system. And it gave us some very effective sounds.
Can you recall which tunes that was used on?
You remember Jolene?
Oh, I was going to ask you about that song because it's so striking.
Jolene is probably the best example. And so we just got in there alone when they were on the road one time and remixed it that way. And, it was just kind of a knockout. You know, the meter didn't move 10 dBs all the way through it.
Right.
Because when she's singing, that pushes down the lead instruments automatically, and when she quits, it pops them right back up, so they're right in there with her, but out of the way. It's a tricky technique, and you can't use it on everything. But you could there, because we had like a Buck Trent and some others playing the lead instrument. But if you tried to do that when you had a string section or anything, it sounded terrible. But it sounded good on Jolene, and I believe we had it on the Mule Skinner Blues. It's compression, that sort of thing. But in that case, as a producer, I didn't have to worry about the songs, the material, the instrumentation that was brought in, and so on. But to worry about how we were going to mix this to make it something special, you know?
Yeah. Well,
I was delighted with it, and I think the public was too.
Yeah.
But that probably you're going to have to go back over some of this.
That's all right.
To sort it out, because it makes sense when you get it all. together, but it's a little hard to tell it all in a short time.
Yeah. Well, one of the things about Jolene, just to stick with that for a second, was which that technique you're describing is almost like you were mixing it in real time as you went. Because by that time you were always already doing a lot of multi-tracking.
We were doing some.
Mm.
Yeah. And so now I'm sure I haven't. I think the last production I did now was in probably 81 or 2.
Mm-hmm.
Serious production. But I think now you could probably set it on a computer and do the same thing.
Yeah.
As to pull it up right here and there, but you couldn't physically do it that fast at that time.
Right.
You couldn't pull those pots up and down that quick. But
now Jolene sounds to me like the vocals a little bit is doubled, almost a flanging sort of approach.
Yeah.
Is that right? You recall on that?
No, I don't.
Because I was wondering at what point you started. I guess flanging is the right word, where the
I don't know what that means.
Where it's almost like they're two vocal. I can't tell whether she's singing harmony with herself or whether there's two vocals and they're just slightly out of phase.
Yeah. Okay. That's I don't know, but I know that we used to tune some guitars for the same thing. The strings on a 12 string. Get them slightly out.
Mm-hmm.
But we had to do a lot more stuff physically then, I guess. But it's just that I remember that as a thing I could do for Dolly.
Right. Now you're interesting as a producer for a lot of reasons, but one reason is that you're there aren't many that come from a writing background. And that are almost from a literary background.
Oh.
I mean, how did that affect the way you approached production? That you really, I'm sure you looked at song form and you looked at language maybe pretty closely. Is that correct?
Well, I grew up in the Missouri Ozarks.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the songs that I heard on the radio, that type kind of music, as I was growing up. By 1948, when I entered radio, I had a little band. I was playing with a little band first that recorded, and we just had a band there while I was going to college for 6 years out west.
Mm-hmm.
Then I came back to the Ozarks and then pretty quick over to Nashville.
Okay. Now you wrote the Carroll County Accident.
Yes, I did.
And how did you present that to Porter Wagner right after you wrote it?
I wrote it once coming down to the Choctaw country here, and that time I was dating my wife to be. And I was driving pretty fast as I came out Nashville and into Carroll County, Tennessee. And I thought, if I don't slow down, I'm going to be the Carroll County accident. And I thought, boy, that sounds like a song if I can figure it out, you know. Well, I got the first two lines of that as I drove along. Carroll County pointed out as kind of square. Big thing that happened is the county fair. I said, yeah, this here is some kind of a story.
Mm-hmm.
All I have to do is figure out what it is. So as I came along, I had, first of all, when I write, and it's true today, I first get kind of an idea of what I would like to write. Like, I would like to write a story song.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll dwell with me for a while. And then such things just happen. And I've written most everything while I'm driving.
Is that right?
Somewhere. I get a few miles out of town. You know, your mind's free. And,
yep.
And so by the time I got down here to where I live now, is where I was coming from, Nashville, I felt like I had a song. I'd stop a little bit and write down a few more verses, and I had the beginning and the end figured out, and I had to go back and I put the middle part of the story in, you know. You know when you can do that, when you got a good lead, and you know kind of where you're going?
Yeah.
And I just said, well, when I can, I'll get back and put the middle into it.
Uh-huh.
So I did that. I wrote that song in that way. And I got to Nashville at a later time, and I told Porter I had a song that might be good for him. You know, I'm very slow to push any of my productions onto my artists. I just didn't believe in that.
Yeah.
By the same token, I thought if I had one that might work, I'd be remiss not to show it to him.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, well, just put it on my desk. He had an office upstairs in the building then, and I called one of our engineers, and he met me at the studio, and I put it on tape, me and a guitar. Now, and I left it on his desk the next morning, and when he got in, he called and ran down. He said, how soon can we cut it?
Wow. Yeah.
So I said, well, anytime, you know. How about Friday? I said, fine, that's good.
Uh-huh.
So we went in, we cut it, and the fiddle led up, I think it was Mac McGuire.
Mm-hmm.
And they went on the road for the weekend. He came back Monday and said, what'd you think of that cut on the Carroll County accident? I hesitated a minute. He said, me too, let's do it again, you know. And I said, what's up? He said, Buck has figured out a lick on the bus. Buck Trent.
Uh-huh.
You know all these people, don't you?
And when I don't, I have lists, but I did know,
okay.
Buck Trent, yeah.
He's a banjo player.
Mm-hmm.
With a pedal banjo. Anyway, we went back and did it again. And it really felt good that time. Although the other one wasn't bad,
uh-huh,
the first time through. In fact, I haven't been able to find my lacquer of that first one.
Mm.
But I'm still looking through things.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That original cut. But, well, that's the way that Carroll County came about. And I've kind of done that with my songs. If the artist doesn't flip over it, forget it, you know?
Yeah.
But if they do, then you go ahead. So, because you are all just thinking about what can be a hit, you know?
Right.
So if you could pick them all the time or had advantage of them all the time, you'd have a hit every time.
Yeah.
But that's the hardest thing in the world to find, is a good song.
Yeah.
I think.
I'll bet.
Because you've got a lot of artists, and same way with the Wings of a Dove.
With Ferlin Husky.
With Ferlin, yeah.
Did you write that in the car?
Yeah, I was going home. I was working with Game and Fish and producing movies.
Uh-huh.
Wildlife movies.
Yeah.
And I had my guiding thought on that is I want to do a song about some of these game animals or birds that I'm working with. I finished a segment of 13 shows going on television that fall of color wildlife movies. A pretty good thing back in 1958.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that day I'm going to have them ready, you know?
Yeah.
I really am going to have them ready. Which was nice, and nice feeling. So as I went home, that was just kind of a little prayer I made up singing along ago. And I wasn't writing seriously then. I'd written a few things, but there was a visitor at home, and I thought, well, I'm not going in there. Well, it was a sales lady, you know. the Avon type.
Yeah.
While they're in there. So, as a result, I wrote it down, the words to that, on a sack beside me. And I found out, just singing it around the house, with a, as we'd sing once in a while, the people liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And that they sang it again, you know. Well, one Easter, I was out having Easter dinner with Pearl, and this was after I had quit managing and gone with Game and Fish, you know. And he said, let me play you my newest release. He played a lacquer of something. The British thing said, what do you got? Anything new? Hand me the guitar. And so I thought of that, and I sang Wings of a Dove, and he grabbed my knee and hollered, Bob, that's a hit. Who's got it out? You know, and I said, nobody. he said, I don't mean a country hit. That's the top 10 pop smash.
Oh, yeah.
These were his words.
Yeah.
I'll never forget. And can I record it? And I said, you be my guest, you know.
Yeah.
Because this is the spark you look for.
Right.
This is part of your combination. I wrote the song, but this is part of what production is all about.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's to get the enthusiasm from the artist, and if he wore that song. Well, Ken Nelson didn't like it, Wings of a Dove.
He didn't.
No. So, dear friend, I saw him in October.
I talked to him a couple weeks ago.
You did?
Yeah, as part of this article, yeah. He's 88 years old.
Yeah.
He's a great guy.
Sure is. And, you know, I was Pearlin's manager back in starting in 54.
Mm-hmm.
And through that, I'd met Ken out at Capitol. We were recording in the old Capitol studio out there in Hollywood. But anyway.
He didn't like it, huh?
Yeah, he disapproved it for a recording.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's about a year later, because that was Easter dinner, and it come around, came up time for Furlan's contract renewal. And Furlan said, yeah, I'd be glad to sign it if you let me record Wings of a Dove. Why, sure, Furlan, whatever you want to do, you know. So, Game and Fish series got the award as the best conservation series in 1958.
Oh.
And I was in Miami receiving an award for it, making the talk. And I got back, that was in May. I saw Randy Hughes, that was Pearlin's road manager.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, on the street in Nashville, said, Bob, said, Pearlin cut a blankety blank smash, cut a smash. It was funny the way he phrased it.
Yeah.
I said, which song? He said, which song, Wings of a Dove?
Wow.
So, he had been on the session.
That must have been a great moment, yeah.
And Ken didn't come back for it. Ken, let's see, Randy Hughes, Marvin, then stood in for him as producer on it, and later, when Randy got killed in the plane crash in later years, Marvin married his widow, who's Kathy Copas, who's Cowboy Copas's daughter.
Oh, okay, yeah.
The thing about that is that Pearlin and Randy split the publishing on it, see. In BG Music, mm-hmm. when Randy got killed, he was piloting the plane that Cope and Patsy and Hawkshaw were in.
Yep.
That crashed. So he died there with him. And that became Pearlin, then split it into his company, Marvin's widow, Randy's widow, who later married Marvin.
Oh, yeah.
Complicated. They're both all used. Who had happened to be the producer on it. So they ended up with 50-50 publishing on it, which has been great.
Yeah.
They're both it just, at that point, you know, all I had to do was to write a song.
Now, I've never understood, like, when you would produce Dolly Parton and when it was when Porter Wagoner was producing. Was that you worked together, or what was the arrangement there? How'd that happen?
Well, the arrangement was I would produce, would I produce her? I said, well, yes, you know. And he, as time went by, I guess you'd say he wanted a bigger part of the pie or something.
Yep.
And he wanted more credit or whatever it is. We all were functioning in the roles that we should. In that case, he was possibly what you might call an arranger. Where we hired an arranger because he liked to work with a band. And he had his own band, and so it's kind of a show altogether. They would practice on the road. We'd add some key musicians at the studio. But he just, I guess, he wanted more and more of it.
Yeah.
So he finally went, and I don't know, his contract renewal or they made a new one. I wasn't there. And he got listed as producer anyway.
Yeah.
And since that time, even he's had my name taken off of some things that I produced. I always thought it was pretty strange, but the music business is very strange.
Yeah. Well, I wondered about that.
I did my job, you know, as I saw it for the company and for them and for Dolly. And
yeah.
Finally, one day, she came to me, Dolly.
Yeah.
Alone to my office and said, Bob, can we talk? And I said, well, Chet and I are not sure whether this place is bugged or not. We'll go somewhere. Okay, we went out in the car. And she said, I know you and Porter are from the same place in Missouri here in Newsy. I said, yeah, 20 miles away. And that you guys been friends a long time. Said, but I'm getting ready to leave, and I said, Dolly said, you're my artist just like he is another artist, you know. I said, whatever is the best thing for you, that's what we're going to do. And it seems in me, I don't know how much of this is any good for to be circulated, but she wasn't in the negotiations with RCA about her stuff, you know. It was as if he was handling everything.
Yeah.
And in fact, the parallel example was Connie Smith.
Yeah.
And Bill Anderson brought Connie over, and we had a lot of good recordings together. But in the early part of her career, she had come to me about management of somebody. I think she had somebody in Texas was going to or something, but Bill wanted their management, you know?
Yeah.
And she shrunk down at that, you know, and wanted some help. So I called Bill and I told him, I said, Bill, you're talking to Tony about managing, you know, straightforward. And I said, she, that kind of worries her. But I said, I think if you would not take on the management part of her life, that you'd always remain the knight on the white charger that brought her out. And so Bill did. He backed off of that management.
Yeah.
fly and you boost them from behind. Now, this is probably the essence of production, the way I learned it from Chet, the way I felt about it while we worked together.
Mm-hmm.
You fill in whatever really is needed to boost them to their aspirations.
Yeah.
And that was the way we felt about it. Well, this Connie was an example of being freed, you know. Porter, on the other hand, Chet talked to him, you're holding her down. She feels like you're holding her down, you know.
Right.
And things like that.
So finally she just decided, I'm a bust.
Finally, this is what she was telling me in the car this day.
Mm-hmm.
She said, Bob, I'm going to leave Porter. She said, I want you to know what I'm doing. This was some time before it became visible.
Right.
They said, it'll take me a while because we've got that music company together, publishing company. We're doing the show, road shows, we're doing to it. It's going to take me a while to. But she said, I got all these things that I want to do, and you know he won't let me pick a note, sing a note that he don't okay. And I, because we had some episodes in the studio where Porter made the announcement that to some effect that he was the world's greatest producer, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And don't pick a note that I don't tell you. And that the way I got it, that Grady Martin packed up his guitar and said, Porter said, what are you doing? He said, I'm going home, Hoss. I'm afraid I'll hit a note that you don't approve. And he left the studio. As I say, this is interesting stuff, background stuff. But,
right.
But I don't know what good it would do to print it out.
Yeah, I won't do that then.
But anyway, Dolly, well, I said, well, Dolly, fly. You know, do what you're going to do. And I'll be right there. She said, well, Bob, I just wanted you to know so you wouldn't sit there worrying.
Yeah.
So I said, I sure appreciate it, Don, because there's a lot of goings on as Chet's authority was diminished, you know.
Right.
And others came in, things that happened, terrible things. But
Now, do you recall the sessions where you did, I mean, that production job, those famous songs like Jolene, that's just so beautiful, and then the production, and then I Will Always Love You.
Ooh, yeah.
You know, what a beautiful, do you recall the sessions and how that production came together on that?
No, just in general.
Because I was curious
about some sessions. I remember real well, and others that I like. There was a period of time there where Chet and I were both doing three sessions. I was doing three sessions a day.
Just like cooking on all burners.
Oh, yeah. You'd come out, grab a snack, and go back. And in the previously, you had set up all the material and things for everybody. And I'd be coming out. Chet have his clipboard going in, vice versa.
Now, how would everybody cut in at the same time and they were isolated a little bit, or would you actually, by the time you were doing something like I Will Always Love You, where all of a sudden you have this real spare production and the pedal steel will come in, that was overdubbed later and you do a basic track, or how were the tracks built?
Oh, I don't know. I think we got most of it right on the session.
Mm-hmm. And then you go in and do a little sweetening if it needed.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. That
was the approach then, and I know it wasn't much later. I was doing Lester Flatt.
Yep.
And we would do it all on the session. We'd never overdub anything. It was a delight. It was like when I first started recording.
Yeah.
You know, and we would come out of there with the finished cut.
Right, right. But I mean, RCA's famous because, you know, early on, Chet Atkins is taking a knife to tape and doing a little bit of editing, you know.
Oh, yeah.
That happens real early at RCA.
That's right. We did things like cut another ending. That was pretty popular.
That was pretty common to do that.
Uh-huh. Over and B would say, we better make an ending for that one, you know.
Uh-huh.
That's where somebody plunked where they shouldn't.
Yeah.
And everything else was great.
Yep.
Because you're after that max performance, that thing where everything goes together, you know. Like, Chet never did say a lot for me, do I? Rode shotgun with him a bunch. But once he was recording somebody, I don't remember who it was. And I was sitting there in the side shotgun position, and he said, did you hear something wrong? I said, yeah. And he pushed the button and said, let's start over again. Then we got it. He got it started again. He leaned over and said, sometimes you hear something. You can't put your finger on what was wrong, but something didn't sound right. That you trust yourself and you push the button and start. So that was a few of the simple things that he had told me about. But we were awful busy.
Now, by the time you retired, and you weren't having to use knives, you were able to do punch-ins.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So
razor blades, what we used.
And then
instead of a knife.
And oh right, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I was being metaphorical there. So.
Yeah.
But you moved from razor blades to punch-ins.
We had some good. Man, it was good with that razor blade, yeah.
Yeah. Now, let's say if we're talking about later in your work, and we'll stick with Dolly Parton here, did you do punch-ins, and did you do them, or did you have the engineer do them?
Yeah, the engineer did them, yeah.
But you'd point out where it needs to be done?
Huh?
You'd point out where it needs to be done?
Yes, it was kind of a rule. At that time, that you don't touch the engineer's end of the board.
Mm.
But you could communicate with them. And a lot of time they'd say, Bob, do that where you hear it. Here's the one, you know, and they pointed the knob.
Okay.
So you could do that, but most of the time you could communicate. We had good engineers, so they knew what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you'd say, right after so-and-so bring up so-and-so, they might say, here, reach over here. And do that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So mainly we were limited to a dog back button and a clock.
Yeah. Now, at what point did you decide, and how did you decide how much reverb to use, how dry or wet to make a sound?
Well, all I can do is speak of that anecdotally. I did it. Record once with Ted in Studio B called Yakety Yak.
Yep.
And right in the middle where he starts doing rooster yodeling, whatever, I told the engineer to push the echo up to right here, you know, showed him.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, Bob, you know, the Chiefs don't like that much. Like a lot of echo. I said, he'll like it on this one. And, okay, so Chet did it, and we made it like you hear it today.
Yeah.
And Chet came in, and he would stand between the speakers, looking down at us, sort of, where, and listening. And when it went to that high echo where I threw it in, his eyes opened, and he looked at me. And so got to the end, and it just, that's a lot of echo, isn't it? Right? I said, don't touch it. I said, that's a hit. Don't bother it. Don't anybody do anything to it.
Yeah.
That's go ahead. And he said, fine. Okay, you feel that way? I said, yeah.
Yeah. So you just went.
Huh?
You went with your instinct.
And see, he went with it too. He said, oh, this somebody here has lit up over this thing. And that's the way you do. Like one of the techniques that I learned from Chet was, I think it was Bobby Bear, and he were in, and he had a tune that he had picked up, and he had a drawer on the right bottom part of his desk. He pulled out one of the lights and said, here's one, Bobby, that I think that. He played it, and Bobby didn't care. He said, I don't care much for that, okay? And Chet said, oh, is that right? And Bobby said, yeah, I can't get it. Chet said, well, that's okay. I'll just put it back because that's a hit for somebody. Now, listen, that'll get your attention.
I bet.
He said, maybe I better listen to that one again.
Yeah.
Because this is what you all look for mutually. As an artist, you don't want to force something on an artist because they will not. If they don't get it, they won't do it well.
Right.
But if you believe in it strongly, then that can rub off on it. If you transmit that to them, and they'll say, well, Bobby said, why does Chet like this, you know?
Yep.
And you know, I've always heard that Patsy didn't like one of her tunes. I don't know if it's crazy or I've heard a piece.
Right. I was reading about that the other night.
What Owen had, but Owen believed in
it. Yeah.
And then she was good for singing it, see? A good job is a hit record.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you recorded
that, I think illustrates the relationship with artists. If you do have a real hit, you think you need to give it that extra try.
Right.
Chet did with Bear.
Yep.
They give it that extra try to transmit to them. You may be missing something.
Yep.
And so you get a good relationship with your artists that way, like I had with Jim, Ed, and Helen, and everybody.
Yeah.
We all had good relationships.
Yeah.
We had some good stuff.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you talking to me.
I
really do. It's great to hear about the work that you did. When Dolly Parton would come up for, when you'd schedule a recording session, would she come up, had you already worked through the tunes with her? Did you do rehearsals? Or
no, this is where I say Porter and her would do it on the bus, on the road.
They worked it out on the road. Oh,
yeah,
okay.
By and large, yes, that's right.
Did you have to do editing with her? Or she seems to be pretty capable of just nailing it most of the time.
Yeah, she could nail it.
Yeah.
Same way with Connie and once you know you listen at that session, and no matter who's been doing the musical arrangement or whatever on the bus or down in their studio or where, you've got to hear a recording that sounds good.
Yeah.
Somebody asked me once what was great about recording Chet Atkins. I said it was a series of good listening enterprises.
Yeah.
Exercises. And but I still, and he counted on me to say, you know, just exactly what I thought.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Yeah.
Or Chet, we probably ought to do that over again.
Mm-hmm.
Or before I could say anything, he'd say, let's do another one.
Right.
Because while he would be picking, he'd be thinking of a different way he was going to do something. But this is, if I convey this, is where, like on Jack and Jack, where I said, don't touch it, don't do anything.
Yeah.
That was my job.
Yeah.
And so when Dolly left, then Porter, so I did her next session. She called me over, said, Bob, I want you to sing a part on that, you know,
mm-hmm.
which I did. But we've remained very good friends, and it's there again, even I was doing my role there as a producer in conferring with her, and you know, it's so complex.
Yeah.
Your relationship as a producer, because you're not. There have been other all kinds, I'm sure.
Right.
You've probably been studying this, you know.
Yeah.
Some of them say, you come in and record this. I've seen that. I've known about it.
Right.
Where the record companies say, come in and do this. If you don't, I've known record companies that if they didn't get to publish it, they wouldn't record it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine.
All of that going on. But we had a nice, free relationship, and Dolly and I had a good understanding all the way.
Well, that's.
What are you doing? When you wrote your first letter, I asked some of my writer friends in Nashville, "Who are you?" And I told Bill Littleton, "Did he know you?" And he said, "No, but if he's going to interview you, he knows how to pick out people to interview." Well, my name matters.
I'll take that compliment. Take it anywhere I can get it. Well, you know what I did? I write for, you know, they probably tell you Tower Records, you know, is, and you probably know this, is an incredibly big record store.
Okay.
And so, you know, it probably is it has a bigger inventory.
You do that all the time?
Yeah, I write for them all the time. I've written a lot about jazz for them, and I wrote a piece a few years ago on record producers, and I told them when I wrote it, I said, we should do this with country producers.
Yeah.
And
it just didn't happen
for a few years.
Right.
So they went ahead and said, yeah, we want to do it. And so one of the things that I've been